everyone, to today's podcast. I have a very special treat for you today. The treat that I have is something that everybody needs in everything that they do, whether it's with children, whether it's with family, whether it's with a deal, whether it's with an agent, whether it's with a tenant. It's something that is I think, one of the key ingredients to being a successful property investor. Now, to treat you all, I actually have on the line someone who I drug across all the way from Germany to come to the recent I Love Real Estate super conference that we had in Sydney. Oh my goodness, was that a good event? It was so fabulous. There was, I don't know, 600 people in the room. We gave away prizes. It was so good. I think a lot of you are actually listening to it live when we streamed around Australia as well. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. The person I want to introduce you to, as I say, we flew in from Germany, and he is a paid negotiator. This man I've been having on stage with me for a number of years, and he is someone who is paid to go and negotiate deals, whether it be a company merger, whether it be a sales negotiation. It's all sorts of things. So you think he knows a little bit about negotiation? I would say he definitely does. So let's not go on any further. Let's introduce the man. His name is Dennis Hall. Dennis, are you on the line?
I certainly am, Dimpner. How are you?
Fabulous, and great to have you here.
Great to be here, and after that intro, I can't wait to hear what I've got to say.
Yes, I think you're worth listening to. What do you think?
Look, I'd agree with you, but then I often agree with you. So.
Well, I did drag you all the way across from the other side of the world to be on stage, so I think I'm doing okay in the negotiation stakes.
Yeah. Look, I tell you what, I think I could learn a few things from you myself.
We'll see. Okay, Dennis, let's talk about some of the things that you find people make big mistakes in when they're negotiating. Where would you like to start with that question?
Look, let's start at the beginning. I think a lot of people participate in a lot of negotiations that they don't even realise they're negotiating. I mean, we're all very aware of the negotiation where it's a, you know, you've set up an appointment, you're meeting with a realtor, or you're meeting with a vendor, and you know you're going into a negotiation, but that's maybe 10% of the time. There's a lot of other times where we're making agreements with other people that are in fact a negotiation, but we don't identify them as negotiations until it's too late, and we usually realise our mistake about 15 minutes after we've said yes to something that we shouldn't have. And that's where I think a lot of people can improve their negotiation outcomes, is by recognising that they negotiate a lot more than they think.
So when you talk about that and they agree to things that perhaps they shouldn't have, what sort of things are you talking about? You know, are we talking about family life? Are we, you know, where you mindlessly say, sure, honey, I'll do that, and then you go, what? What have I agreed to? Or are we talking about workplace? What are we talking about?
Look, the whole spectrum, really. Yes, certainly at home, but let's keep it focused on business. Let's say, for example, that you are you're contacting a vendor and you're setting up an appointment to negotiate a contract. Mm-hmm. The call that you're about to make is going to be a negotiation over when and where that negotiation is going to happen. But all you recognise is that it's a phone call. And as a consequence, you probably don't get an optimum result in terms of, you know, the time and place that you could be negotiating the contract deal, because you thought that the phone call was just a conversation, and it's not a conversation. Or it could be It could be a colleague that's asking a favour of you in a sense, and before you realise it, you've committed yourself to something that's going to take up time that you would have rather have spent somewhere else. I mean, we've all had that feeling where, you know, we've done a face palm and gone, why did I say yes to that? And the reality is we've said yes to it because we didn't realise we were negotiating until it was too late.
Would you agree then that, particularly when we're talking about business as opposed to family, that preparation is the key?
Oh, look, without a doubt. You know, you can't go into something that is as complex and demanding as negotiation without a significant amount of preparation. And in my experience, and I, as you introduced me, I am a paid negotiator. Far too many of the people that I negotiate with are underprepared. Now, of course, that makes my job easier. but the reality is they're doing themselves a disservice. You know, they don't know enough about me. They don't know enough about the people that I've been contracted to negotiate for. In a lot of instances, they don't know enough about their own position and what it is they should or should not be agreeing to. And that makes for a very challenging conversation.
I actually find this is the biggest mistake that real estate investors make, whether it be under preparation for a negotiation, whether it be under preparation for due diligence on a property, you know, under preparation in knowing, you know, what the other party even wants. I find that lack of questions seems to be the biggest thing that real estate investors, you know, have as a mistake. What sort of things, what type of preparation and what type of things or questions should people be asking perhaps going into a negotiation?
Look, I think in terms of preparation before the actual face-to-face negotiation, they've got to understand what the other party is coming to the table with a picture in mind of it. Like, so what are they going to be expecting from you? And in turn, what are you prepared to give them in return for the things that you're going to be asking them for? So it's a case of being able to map out, here's what I want, here's what I believe they want, here are some of the things that I think they'll do to try and get what they want. And so it's about mapping all of that out, doing a whole list of different scenarios, because there are, at the outset of any negotiation, there are literally dozens of different directions in which the conversation can go. And the planning and preparation part of the negotiation is all about mapping all of those out. What if this happened? What would I do? If they said this, what would I say in return? If they stonewall me on this aspect of the deal, what am I going to do to try and soften them up? These are all questions that you should have answers to before you sit down at the table with them, because without that information, you really are flying blind, and that's very dangerous in a high-powered business negotiation.
It's almost like doing a flowchart, isn't it, where you've got, you know, yes takes you this way to that level of questioning and no takes you the other way, and doing like a mind map of it all.
Yeah, well, I always work with mind maps. I love, you know, doing a sketch and, you know, seeing what the flow of the whole process might look like. That's not everybody's cup of tea, but you definitely need a structure. Otherwise, you're going to end up with, you know, 24 pieces of paper that don't make a lot of sense if they happen to, you know, be put back together in the wrong order or whatever. So having a flowchart, such as a mind map, is a really, really good idea to put what is a very confusing environment into some semblance of sense.
You know.
So in terms of preparation, they really do need to sit down and think long and hard about what they want and how they see themselves going about getting that, and what the other side is likely to want, and how they see the other side approaching getting what they want.
No matter how much you do that and draw flow charts and mind map it, and, you know, if they say this, then I'll say this, and if they say that, then I'll say this, you at some point you're going to have to go, I'm just going to have to give it a go, because you can't ever cover absolutely everything. But what you can do is get yourself to a point where you feel you have enough control to be able to persuade the conversation in one way or another. Would you agree with that?
Oh, look, definitely. A negotiation is a living, breathing entity, and you can't map out precisely how it's going to turn out. I mean, you know, I've been negotiating professionally now for 30 years, and I'm still learning. You know, I still sometimes get blindsided, caught unawares, and I like to think I'm pretty good at this. So you are never going to have a negotiation that works exactly according to the plan that you've drawn. But that's no excuse not to plan. If you can have an effective structure to the negotiation you're about to engage in, it relieves you of so much pressure and allows you to think more clearly when you're actually sitting at the table, because so much of what goes on, probably 60 to 70% of what goes on, is decided before you even sit down. So having an effective plan really does give you a head start into the whole process.
Have you ever been in situations where you've been absolutely, completely blindsided?
Yes. Yes, definitely. As an example, here's a situation that totally befuddled me for quite a number of years. So I was working for a travel company in the 1980s, and every 6 weeks I had to go to Singapore from Sydney and negotiate with a number of contractors in the Singaporean market to be able to put holiday programs together for the company in Australia. Mm-hmm. Now, each time I went to Singapore, I would pre-arrange my appointments because I only had 5 days there, Monday to Friday. So I was moving pretty fast to get all of these appointments done. And all of the appointments were made before I got to Singapore. So I would arrive in Singapore around about midnight on a Sunday to get ready for my first appointment, which was usually around 9 or 10 o'clock the next day. And without fail, when I arrived in Singapore and I opened my hotel door, there would be literally dozens of envelopes, all marked for my attention, with messages from the people that I'm meeting, all wanting to change their appointments, which from having a well-structured and well-ordered week, all of a sudden everything would be happening at the latter part of the week because nobody could see me on Monday or Tuesday. It'd have to be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Now, that went on for about 5 visits until I realized, thanks to a colleague of mine that experienced a similar thing, that this was all a strategy by those operators to put me under pressure. They all colluded with each other and found out when I was arriving, when I was leaving, and then they arranged with each other to change all the appointments, because I didn't realize until afterwards what a coincidence it was that all their requests for change didn't overlap with each other. You know, they were all requesting different times. It was a coordinated effort to put me under time pressure so that instead of having 5 days to get everything done, I in fact only had 3. And it took me nearly 6 months to figure out what was going on. So, they're sneaky little devils, these people that you negotiate with. They'll try any trick to try to get an advantage.
So time pressure is a good thing, huh? What about where you have the negotiation? Is that important?
Oh yeah, definitely. Look, I mean, everybody knows that the home team always has an advantage, don't they?
Mm, that's what they say.
In any game, the home team has an advantage, and it's the same with negotiating. You know, if the other party is in territory that they're familiar with, whether it's their offices, their premises, their home, that gives them an advantage. Similarly, if you're on home turf, it gives you an advantage in that, you know, you've got more confidence, you're familiar with your surroundings. Now, I'm not suggesting for a moment that you always insist that negotiations have to be in your home or in your territory, but understand that when you are away from your territory, there is the perception that you're at a disadvantage. So be ready for that. Understand that you've given them that advantage. And even if you say to yourself, I don't care, and some people don't, that's not the point. By meeting them on their turf, you've given them something that they value. So if you've given them that, then be prepared to ask for something in return. So if they're going to pick the place, then maybe you pick the time. But don't allow them to control the whole thing. So if they pick the place, you pick the time, or vice versa. So because there is some equity in the decision making that's happening, and these decisions are all happening before you've even met.
Mm.
So negotiation starts to happen a lot sooner than people really realise.
What I mean, we're talking here about a power play, really, aren't we? Do you see
yes.
things being like that in a negotiation?
Oh, look, the thing with negotiation is that whoever controls the environment controls the outcome. So it's not about dominating somebody, but it is about understanding the dynamics of what drives a conversation, a negotiation, to go in the directions it does. So, yeah, people use power plays. They will, you know, puff themselves up like a peacock and tell you how important they are in an effort to intimidate you. I've been in negotiations where a negotiator will actually try physical intimidation, not through physical threat, but they'll sit very close to you, or they'll stand over you. They'll use a voice that is not quite angry, but certainly isn't soft tones. And these are all tactics to try to put you off your game. Mm. And unfortunately, those people that are not prepared and haven't planned well for the negotiation are usually the ones that fall prey to those sorts of things, because they've just not thought it through to that degree.
So do you match and measure from that perspective? So if someone is, you know, abrupt and aggressive, is that what you do? Or if someone is meek and mild and want to have a cup of tea, is that what you do? Do you match and measure like that?
Look, it all depends with tactics. They are very, very powerful tools for us, but they are also extremely environmentally sensitive. So it depends on the environment that you're in, the person that you or people that you're negotiating with, the issue that's on the table at the time. All sorts of variables come into play here in terms of do I match them, or do I ignore it, or do I do something else? Do I make fun of it? You've got all sorts of decisions to make, and those decisions can only be made in the moment. You really can't say at the outset, I'm going to match them. Because if you match them and that escalates the tension in the room, how far are you prepared to go with that? Because ultimately, if the tension rises too high, the negotiation's going to break down. And you don't necessarily want that.
Mm. Mm. Does culture come into that?
Like it can do, yes. Yeah, so, if you're negotiating with somebody of a Japanese background, it will be a very gentle negotiation. As a matter of fact, the Japanese are very difficult to negotiate with because they basically don't negotiate. But if you're negotiating with a Korean, for example, that will feel like World War III because they're very aggressive. But that's just the nature of their culture. Once you've done the deal, they become your best friends. So cultural implications do have a big bearing on the sorts of tactics that people are likely to use and your measured responses.
Mm. You'd say there about Japanese. I've never negotiated with a Japanese person at a business level. Why don't they negotiate? Why do you say that?
The Japanese see negotiation as being uncouth and uncultured. Their attitude is this: talk to me about a deal, explain to me how you bring value to the table, and I'll tell you whether I want to work with you. So in most Western cultures, ultimately a negotiation, after a lot of shadow boxing and dancing, and or it comes down to, well, I'm prepared to give you this, and they'll turn around and say, well, no, we want a bit more than that, and so you start haggling with each other. The Japanese will not haggle. They see it as beneath them. So if you put an offer on the table, they'll either accept it or reject it. They won't haggle with you. So it's not a case of negotiating as much as it is a case of presenting to the Japanese. They're very, very different to most other cultures that I've negotiated with.
Mm. Okay. So through this process, I mean, you mentioned there before relationships. Do you see in the types of dealings that I guess my listeners would be dealing with, not big mergers and acquisitions at the corporate end, but more negotiations around real estate items, you know, with whether it be tenants, agents, you know, pricing, buyers, sellers, all of that sort of thing. Do you find relationship building to be a big factor?
Yes, it is, in a nutshell. Anybody can negotiate a great deal once or twice. But if you're going to be consistently successful at commercial negotiation, you have to negotiate not only the outcome of the deal, but also the building of a relationship in the process, so that you can come back to that table at some point in time, or at least, you know, pick up the phone and say, hey, I've heard some rumblings about an issue in this area. What have you heard? You know, and people will want to talk to you because they respect the way that you do business and they like doing business with you. So negotiation is a bit of a juggling act. Yes, you have to cut to the chase and get to a deal, but you've got to be able to do that with a degree of respect and decorum that acknowledges that the other side has a position that they're entitled to as well as you. So you've got to find ways for both sides, or all sides if it's more than one party, for all sides to come away from the conversation having achieved an acceptable outcome. Mm. And a relationship plays a very, very big part in that.
Yeah. One of the things that I think I mentioned this before is questioning. You know, I call it third level questioning, where you just find out as much as you possibly can about the other party, about whether it be direct questions around the deal itself, or whether it be about their personal life, about their goals, dreams, aspirations, what they want, all of those sort of things. Because I think one of the biggest mistakes that we as investors can make is to assume. And we all know the old adage that assume, yes, is making an ass out of you and me. And you think you know, you think you know what they want, but they, you know, unless you ask that really third level detailed questioning, you know, you might think it's all about price, and it may have nothing to do with price.
Yep. Yeah, look, you've really got to, in negotiation parlance, we refer to it as focusing on interests rather than positions. And a position is what somebody's saying they want. So you know, with a vendor, they're going to tell you very, very quickly that they want this price for the deal. But really what's more important is to understand why they want that, and that's what an interest is all about. Mm-hmm. And you're spot on when you say that the majority of people don't ask the right questions to uncover that. you know, just knowing the price isn't enough. Just knowing a time frame isn't enough. What you've got to get an understanding of is the driving forces that have led to that need or desire. And the only way you're going to do that, I mean, you refer to it as third level questioning. I prefer to refer to it as open questioning. Questions that people cannot answer with a simple yes or no. Questions that stimulate a conversation rather than perpetuate an interrogation. So using questions like, what would be the key elements of us being able to do a deal is far more powerful than just saying, what do you want? You know, why is this issue so important for you in comparison to the issue we were discussing a moment ago? So using questions that people have to reply to with several sentences rather than just a short yes, no, or maybe is going to go a long way to uncovering those interests rather than just continually focusing on the positions. And people spend too little time in that space because they think the negotiation is about doing the deal. The deal happens as a consequence of the conversation you have leading up to whatever bartering you're going to do. And that should be at the end. But many, many times I've seen negotiators go into one of these meetings and within 5 minutes they're bartering with each other and it leads nowhere because neither side knows enough about the other to really have a meaningful exchange in that space.
That's right. Tell me, how much emphasis do you have on body language?
A huge amount, huge amount. You know, you mentioned before, Dimfna, that, you know, asking those third-level questions is very, very important, and it is. But the other thing that's important is the other side of the asking the question coin is at what level are you listening? Because if you're only listening to the words, you're missing 80% of what they're telling you. And the 80% of what they're telling you is the interest side of it rather than the position side of it. And that's where body language comes in. That's where the tone of voice comes in. That's where, you know, emphasis on certain words. You know, as a very, very quick example as to the power of your voice in understanding meaning, let me show you something. If I make a statement such as a woman without her man is lost, there would be a lot of women in the audience that would object to that statement because I'm indicating that, you know, a woman without a man is lost. But if I rephrase that, I don't change any of the words, but I rephrase it and I say a woman without her man is lost. Now, that's an entirely different meaning. But if you're not listening carefully, you would get the wrong meaning from what I'm saying. And so just asking powerful questions is not going to give you what you need unless you are listening at a heightened level. And at that heightened level, you start to notice things like the tone of voice, the emphasis on words, the body language. Where are they looking when they're saying something? You know, all of these are signals that they are communicating with you, but are you listening? Or are you just hell-bent on getting them into a corner where they sign a piece of paper, in which case the deal probably isn't going to be as good as it could have been?
You know, what I find often in situations like this is that the person is so fixated on what they're going to say next that they don't listen to what's actually being said or meant in the conversation that they're having at that point in time.
Exactly. They're too busy with the next point, or they're too, I call it listening for opportunity. You know, they're too busy listening for something that fits their picture so they can pounce on it rather than listening for understanding. And in negotiation, you've got to first listen for understanding before you can pursue the opportunity.
That's the secret of marriage, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry?
I said that's the secret of marriage, isn't it?
Yeah, well, no comment.
That's too hard a topic. Let's get back to negotiations.
Exactly.
The other thing that I find that is very lacking in a lot of real estate investors is follow-up.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, look, I couldn't agree with you more. Look, I think that, you know, we're so happy to do the deal. Often we forget that things happen after the deal that we need to be aware of and that we need to be in the loop with. Let's face it, if you've got somebody in your life and the only time you hear from them is when they want something from you, that limits the value of that relationship. Mm. And in commercial parlance, if you're not following up with the people that you're negotiating with, keeping in touch with them, making sure that the deal they're experiencing matches the deal that they agreed to, then you find it increasingly difficult to go back there because they tighten up, they close up because they realize that, hey, you know, Dennis is on the phone and the only time we hear from him is when he wants to cut a deal. Yeah. So, okay, we'll cut a deal with him, but we're not going to make it easy. So, yeah, it is about maintaining that relationship. I mean, with some of my commercial relationships in the travel industry, I was in that industry for, 17 years all up. And towards the end of that 17 years, I had people that I negotiated with where our negotiations were no longer negotiations. You know, we just have a chat with each other. We'd have a conversation, a cup of coffee, you know, maybe some beers, depending on the time of the day, and we'd sign contracts. You know, it became signing the contract just became a part of a process rather than some Herculean effort to get something across the line. Because we built trust, we built a relationship, we knew that we could rely on each other, we understood each other's business requirements, and in that environment, the deal-making becomes almost secondary. It sort of happens almost by accident, and that's a beautiful thing, a beautiful place to be in.
Mm. Even things like confirming what has been discussed is an important element for, you know, that follow-up process, because you know, if we're only relying on verbal, then there can be miscommunication and misunderstanding of what's even being said. So a written follow-up communication really lays the foundation of clarity around what has been, you know, what the deal has been. Do you agree with that?
Oh, look, for sure. I mean, look, let's face it, a lot of commercial negotiations end up in a contract of some sort, and that provides a written agreement, and that's great. But contracts are drawn up from memorandums of understanding and from informal emails. And I always make sure when I've negotiated or concluded a face-to-face negotiation that I get some sort of email to them within 24 hours. Where I just say, okay, you know, thanks for your time, really appreciated, you know, the time we spent together, just reconfirming, you know, I've agreed this, you've agreed that, looking forward to working with you, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that at least provides some sort of solidarity around what your understanding of the nature of the deal is. And if there's any misunderstandings, it's better to iron them out sooner rather than further down the track.
Mm, that's exactly right. So in closing then, what are some key tips that you could give to my listeners that might help them in their negotiations in the fields that they'll be involved in?
Well, I think first of all, understand that probably 80% of the conversations they're having are mini negotiations. So recognize that, you know, you've got the opportunity to negotiate pretty much most of the time. Whether you choose to or not is entirely up to you, but you do have that choice. That's a key thing. Understand that power, you know, is a big player in the negotiation arena. Whoever controls the conversation controls the outcome. So brush up on your tactics. Understand that the other party is likely to do things to put you in a position where you feel vulnerable. That's the name of the game. So be ready for that and be prepared to defend yourself and also be prepared to take control of that conversation. And ultimately, practice your questioning, so that instead of asking questions that lead you nowhere, you're asking questions that open people up, so that you're getting information upon which you can base decisions that are going to make a huge difference to the outcomes that you get. And once you get those outcomes, make sure that you follow up, keep in touch, confirm the nature of the deal, even if it's only something fairly minor, so that both sides have got, both you and the other side have got something there in writing that says, you know, 3 months down the track, yep, we did agree to that, so we need to honour it.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the line and sharing all your wisdom and years of practice and experience and all of those things with all of my listeners, because it is such a big part of everything that we do. Negotiation, communications, you know, being able to effectively get a desired outcome from a situation or a circumstance. And you're certainly someone who has a wealth of experience and a huge amount to teach and give in that department. So, Dennis, again, thank you so much for coming on stage with me at the I Love Real Estate Super Conference, and then for sharing, little snippets of perhaps what you covered then on this podcast. So thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Dimson. Always a pleasure to talk with you and appear with you. And I hope that what we've discussed helps your people in their ongoing endeavours to improve their negotiation outcomes.
Fabulous. Well, thank you, Dennis, again. And guys out there, I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon on another completely different topic. And don't forget to subscribe to iTunes. You know, if you subscribe to iTunes, they automatically come out to you all of the podcasts. You don't have to think, oh, has she done another one? It'll automatically come out to you. So get on there and subscribe. They're free. Send them on to your friends. Send them on to your mates and get them on the same road as you to get out there and start making some serious profits in the real estate market. So thank you again, and I'll be back again to talk to you very soon. Thank you again, Dennis, and bye for now.